New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why is this surreal for you?
Well, you have to understand, like, so when Scream came out, I was your target demographic, man. I was in high school.
Wow.
So, and I remember watching it in the theater and the whole thing of it. And now, if I was to tell, 18-year-old Patrick, hey, I'm going to be doing a podcast with Jamie Kennedy, I would be freaking the fuck out. I'd be like, you kidding? So, I'm just going to boy crush for a second.
And go
just
say, for it.
This is pretty awesome. So thank you for inviting me.
Wow. Well, thank you. And this is everything that you talk about, bro.
Yeah.
So you literally came up on my FYP, which is for your page. This is producer Patrick. What's your name?
My name is Patrick Caligiuri.
Okay.
But the Caligiuri, the Italian name, throws people off. So we'll just stick with the Irish one.
And you are, everything that's happening, I'll get into it slowly, is what you're saying. It's literally because of what you're saying is actually happening. So Patrick is a producer, and I saw his content, and I think it's really amazing.
Thank you.
And it just showed up on my page, and I started following. I think he's the voice of Hollywood. I think you're the voice of stuff that's not being talked about. And I think you're the voice of reason. So I was like, wow. So then I sent you to my buddy, who was a big CBS guy. Mm-hmm. And he said, I think I know him. Did you work on Big Brother?
I did, seasons 10 and 12.
So you know Gen.
Gen Maynard?
Yes.
And I know Gen from Kid Nation. That was actually my first CBS show.
And guess where that idea kind of came from?
I don't know. Tell me, but I'm going to have a guess.
Child Island. That was a prank on the Jamie Kennedy experiment.
No shit.
Yeah. So you did.
We've come full circle now.
So Tom Foreman.
Yep.
Scott Einzinger.
Yes.
Those are all my peeps. No really, Scott much more. I don't know Tom that well.
No, I remember Scott. Scott was cool because, he was also coming from Howard Stern.
Yes.
So it was like, whoa, and he had his hair and he was all dressed in black.
Yes.
And he just kind of did his thing.
He was the multicolored hair before anybody.
He was the first one?
Yes, that I saw. And then, but I didn't talk to Gen. I talked to my buddy John, who was very tight with Gen.
Wait, is it John Platt?
John Timus.
John Timus.
Who said, yeah, you've worked in the CBS system. So I've done a lot. I've been in CBS more than I realized because I've done different networks. But because they used to own the WB, mm-hmm. which I had a lot of love at. But then also I did Ghost Whisperer, and then I did Criminal Minds. But also I had multiple deals, which we could talk about, that never went anywhere, but were awesome to have. And once a week I'd go to Gilligan's Island and, and pitch, and then I'd get a bunch of notes and it would go nowhere.
Right.
So you're from the Bay?
I live in the Bay Area now. I lived in Los Angeles for 18 years. And then my wife got a job in tech. And during the pandemic, this was like 2021, we're like, we really like the Bay Area, and we're just like, maybe we should look into moving out of Los Angeles, because at that point everything was going remote. I could do pre-production from home. I would only go on location, and because I do reality, it's never in LA. It's some island somewhere or Alaska. So I would just go on location, and then I would do post from home. I could log into the server, as long as the server was in Burbank. I could log in from anywhere.
So give me a little bit of your credits, because I know nothing about you except what I watch, and I like it that way.
All right.
This is a real pod, because I want to get to know you, and I want to really you explain it to the people. So, Big Brother.
Kid Nation.
Kid Nation.
I really did Amazing Race. I did Amazing Race for multiple seasons. Naked and Afraid. Bering Sea Gold. Ice Cold Gold. Swamp People.
So you work with all the peeps.
I've done
everybody.
When it came to adventure reality programming, when it was like Off the Grid, Alaska shows, anything with like miners, ER, not OR, mm-hmm. or like, oil or all that stuff. I was sort of like the guy, because when I originally came out to Hollywood, I wanted to be a sitcom writer.
Mm-hmm.
But by that was 2005 and sitcoms were done. So all of a sudden it was like, yeah, you know, so-so. But must-see TV had its day.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, Big Bang's after that.
Big Bang came after that. There was more,
but I know what you're saying.
But, you know, it wasn't the Seinfeld friend mad about you. That was what I kind of grew up with. But when I came out, it was reality was the new cool thing. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's like, I could travel. I could be on location. I could do cool shit and be in the jungle. And, oh, okay, I'm kind of going with this. And then I just kind of wrote it for about 20 years, and now we're in a much different era.
So you're legit. You have legit. Well, I'm saying that because a lot of people talk shit, and it's like, you have all the credits. Are you? What unions are you in?
Well, Unscripted is non-union.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know if you were WGA.
And then if you're a producer, you're even worse off because you're on salary. I think during the 07-08 strike, they tried to make reality producers writers. But that was when the studios were like, that's the red line. We're not crossing that one.
But you live in the yay.
I live in the bay.
Which
in
we call
the yay.
In the yay, yay.
Oh,
so
okay.
Living
in the yay is like Sunset Strip.
But where?
San Jose.
Okay, so I know exactly. That's I've had a lot of good times there.
Yeah.
Well, good improv there. But that's dystopia right now. There's no one on the streets.
What in San Francisco? San Jose is beautiful.
Yes, but there's not a lot of things open late.
Oh no, it's a sleepy town. Yeah, and it was a big adjustment moving from LA when you're just like, I like my 24-hour pharmacy. You know, I got to get my, you know, Xanax, whatnot. And then you go up there and it's like, no, pharmacy closes at 8, and it took an adjustment to slow down life, but now I'm much more appreciative of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how old are you? 37.
Thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere. I'm 43.
All right. So why I'm so fascinated is because you go on. Why did you start making these TikToks?
Well, it was originally on TikTok because I did Unscripted TV.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always thought was interesting is you could go to film school. You could get writing classes. You could get acting classes. There is absolutely nothing that teaches you about Unscripted TV. It's like, it's a secret society, and you can't talk about Fight Club, but until you're in Fight Club.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? It is television. It's a form of television. No one's talking about this. Everybody's afraid of their NDAs, and that's something we'll get into. And I was like, you know what? This is a learning experience. I would want to know about my craft and document it, and just, you know, just talking about how we structure shows, really just sort of basic logistical stuff. And so I actually grew a following of people who were interested in reality TV and how certain shows got made. But about spring of 2023, I wrapped my last show.
Which was
called Fight to Survive. It was on CW and Roku. And typically, when you wrap a show, you're tired. You need like a month off. You've just had your nose to the grindstone, so you just need to veg for a little bit. And now we're coming around April. Now there's this talk about the WGA going into a strike again. And all of the Unscripted community was like, this could be good. This could be another boom like we had in 07-08 when the writers struck and we had this major upswing in reality production. So we just kind of were biding our time. And it's not that we don't support the writers. We love the WGA and we advocate and hope that our brothers and sisters get what they're fighting for, because we only wish that we could get something like that. You know, we're kind of the lowest caste system of the entertainment industry.
And making some of the biggest waves.
Right.
100% true, though.
Exactly. You know,
you have no unions.
No unions. No
hours
protection.
Can be long. Drives can be long.
Yep.
I mean, trust me. Yeah. I'm in all of it. So yeah, it's true.
So we get our motor oil needs changing every now and then. But as the strikes happened, all of a sudden the opposite happened. It's like no shows are getting greenlit. We're like, this is weird. Oh, maybe it's because the actors strike. They're just kind of waiting to see what the actors are going to do. The actors, they strike. Still nothing. And the thing about our industry is like, you don't want to talk about your situation to anybody else. You don't want to go to your fellow producer and be like, hey man, are you working? Cause I'm not working. Cause the minute you admit that you're not working, you kind of almost become undesirable in Hollywood.
Sad.
Right. It's like, oh, you know, and it's like it, and we're in this kind of game, and it's where we're pitted against each other, where you know, one person trips and fumbles, that's supposed to be somebody else's opportunity.
It's hopefully different now, but just to comment on that, it's like why I won't go to the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Like after party, unless I have something kind of out. Mm-hmm. Because if not, they're like, what are you up to?
Right.
Like, you know, just what you've done is not enough.
Right.
You know, you have to have something recent. And
it's
not,
within months yeah. of your last project. It's yeah. like you could win the Oscar, but 3 months later, it's like, well, what are you doing now? I just won an Oscar.
Bro, how about this? You get on a set and they go, what are you doing after this? They always say, what's your next job? I just started. Exactly. This one.
Exactly. Talk to my assistant. They have that answer.
So you start talking. I have so much to ask
you. Oh, yeah, yeah. So here, we'll keep up with the chronology.
Yeah, I want to stay with this because then I have a comment.
All right.
But I don't want to run around.
No worries. We're doing it. We're on your time.
You're going to be on many. You're going to be on many pods. I can't believe so. This is only your fourth one.
This is my fourth one.
Is this your biggest one?
I did.
By far.
By far, yes. By far. I did Heather McDonald.
Whoa, HMD.
I was on the Juicy Scoop.
Talking this stuff?
Yeah.
Or really?
No, talking this stuff.
Wow, Heather, you beat me to the punch.
She did.
Wow.
She did. She was the first one to reach out.
She's an early pioneer.
She is awesome.
Of reality.
She is awesome. We had a great conversation too.
So, okay, so go ahead.
All right. So no one's talking. And then finally, so you start internalizing it. You're like, is it me? Did I piss somebody off? Nobody's calling me anymore. Oh my gosh. And we are so tied to our careers in this industry. You almost kind of make it about yourself. You're like,
almost.
It is my identity.
Almost.
Right. So what I realized was I started going through the grieving process unbeknownst. I didn't know it, but I was entering the stage of depression, followed by anger. And, it wasn't until I started talking to other executive producers. We have our own network. And then the little kind of seeds started dropping of, have you found work? You know, and this is now coming from people that are my mentors, the people that always I look up to find work. And it's like, why are you having trouble finding work? And then the conversation started getting more real. And one very dear friend of mine finally, you know, the dam burst, and she was just like, I'm doing DoorDash, I'm selling my grandmother's jewelry to make ends meet, and just as an executive.
Hold that thought, because yes. I have to jump in. What is your job in reality mostly?
I'm an executive producer.
You're an EP.
Yes.
So those shows you were EPing?
I wasn't EPing those shows. I worked my way up from production assistant.
What was the last show you EP'd, the one you just did?
Yeah, Fight to Survive.
Okay. So for everyone listening, that's basically, I've been an EP on multiple shows, but basically I have the idea with somebody else where I pay them money, they develop it, and I get my name on it and I walk away. Unless it's something like the Jamie Kane Experiment, which was my baby.
Right.
But that's the top line of the show.
Right.
So this is the boss of the boss.
Showrunner. Well, yes. Not the boss of the boss. I'm the boss's underboss. I'm the showrunner. I'm doing all the stuff the boss doesn't want to do.
Yes.
But I still boss.
But you still have a credit that's a top line credit.
Exactly.
So the person and so the person doing DoorDash, was that also an EP?
That was an EP. Wow. EIC, executive in charge, sort of like the top of the line for and her husband. Why they were in such dire straits, her husband was an audio supervisor. So they were both in the industry. And those are the people that, you know, couples that are both working behind the camera and they have no income.
I have to say one thing, just to, don't let me forget this, because sure. You have these ideas, I don't want to cut you off, is that why this is so important is because someone like me, I can work, I might do a movie or I might do a TV show or do reality or whatever.
Yeah.
I have multiple avenues, okay, but I'm an on-camera thing, okay? What you do and what your friend does and her husband are the nuts and bolts of the business, meaning it's much easier for you to go to job to job to job to job to job than it is someone like me because, you know, I can lose favor or executives go, I don't like that guy as much right now or whatever. But the working class, literally, you are the nuts and bolts of the business. Mm-hmm. And like someone like is a super example of this is a guy by the name of John Stewart, not the on camera. He's the stage manager. He was the stage manager of my show. I get goosebumps. And his daughter is Kristen Stewart.
Okay.
So yeah. Jon Stewart all is right. a legend in the TV business, mm-hmm. but he was stage match every show in Hollywood, and his daughter became a superstar. But so that this is why I'm getting goosebumps, because you're the it's like a craft service person. Not I'm saying that, but like yeah, a person yeah. that you can go from job, you can work 300 days a year. So go ahead.
So, and it's exactly as you said. So before March 2023, the longest I ever went between a gig was 2 months.
After 18 years.
18 years?
Was that you came in 2005.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So in 18 years, yes, two months. When my project ended in March 2023, it would be 1 year and 3 months until I got my next unscripted gig. My next unscripted gig came with a 40% deduction in pay. It was 10 weeks and maybe two levels of demotion.
What was your title?
Supervising producer, a job I did 10 years ago in 2014.
Because of
contraction. And I spoke to a couple agents, unscripted agents, and they're like, I have showrunners that are being story producers. And if you know where a story producer, they're the ones just typing the reality that's going on.
Yes.
He goes, there right now, it is so desperate that there are executive producers that are doing jobs that are literally like so far beneath them. It's incredible.
Literally do story. For everyone listening, story producers are basically someone who takes the minutes.
Yeah.
If you want to say that.
Basically, you are, you know, if creating, you're going from SVP mm-hmm. to manager.
Wow.
If you want to break it down corporately.
Okay, I have a lot to ask you. So you're still wearing boat shoes, bro, like you're living your best life.
You know what? I got to break away for this. You know, my mom, you know, my whole family's from New York, and they always say, my mom's rule was always be ready to go on a yacht. You never know when you're going to go on a yacht.
Smart. So I had a meeting about 8 months ago with an absolute killer of a reality agent. And we went into, I'll just say it, we went into Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And dude, I went in the gate 7, I say off Barham. I mean, I didn't see life until 4 or 5 blocks in.
Yeah.
And I went in the building, and there was like the third secretary in would get the door. The front greeting desk was literally like abandoned. Like it was wild.
I was at Radford 3 weeks ago, and you could have seen tumbleweeds blowing through the place. And when I last worked there, because that's where the Big Brother house is, at stage 18, and it was like Pee Wee's Big Adventure. You know, there was like the showgirls and the people walking back with the glass. Like there was action like you always see
yes.
a typical movie studio. And there was not a soul on the street.
So I have a question about that. So remind me to ask you, but I want to ask you other stuff first about the $1 billion expansion that they just announced that you've talked about.
Yes.
So I made my bones in TV literally because of strikes.
Right.
Jamie Kennedy Experiment was greenlit because of that early strike in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then I sold more stuff to CBS in 07. And, you know, obviously it happened. When you talk about the WGA
mm-hmm.
and the SAG strike, do you think the DGA left everybody out to hang and drive?
You know what? I don't have enough information to like really comment on that.
Okay.
You know, I've heard rumors, but, you know, I think what was happening at the time, I think the studios knew what was happening. They knew that they were running into this crisis, but they just let it ride is what I think. I think they're just like, this is a great opportunity to just say, we're going to take a moment of pause until we could get our shit together. And now they're realizing we still don't have our shit together. I don't know how we're going to get our shit together.
What do you think the SAG strike was actually beneficial, real? Like, or do you think it's a con?
I don't think it was a con, but you ask yourself, what good is a union if the studios are going to do their production outside the United States? And that's what they're doing. And that's the same thing that happened to the auto industry. You know, it was the auto manufacturers started building their plants in Mexico. It's cheaper to make cars in Mexico than it is in the United States. And these streaming services, which have been taken over by tech, you know, they're being gutted out and they're trying to be made more efficient in a creative industry, which is probably one of the most inefficient industries, but it worked. Mm-hmm. The way it was, it worked.
Mm-hmm. So you have so many stats. I can start. I mean, you can start, but like you just... So let's just go ask you a question. So there was a billion or $2 billion announcement that Radford was going to... Before I say this, because I have to say something else, you Spartans. I talked to a very big actor who talked to one of the top five companies in town. And he said, it's good that you're doing stuff in live. The guy is a live performer. And he said, because in 5 years, I don't know where acting's going to be.
Interesting.
And this was a huge person that said this, his company. And then I talked to another guy and he was like, oh man, wouldn't it be great? We come down the hill and then we're doing our sitcom at CBS Radford. They're going to be a $2 billion expansion. I'm like, well, have you talked to Pat? I'm like, in my mind, have you talked to Patrick? Like, I'm like literally coming out of Terra Sushi going, what would I mean, like the announcement is that you're going to come out of Studio City from your 3,000 square foot house and you're going to walk on a new set of a new Big Bang. But
yeah,
but it doesn't make any sense to me.
It made sense back in 2021 when business was booming.
Okay.
So, you know,
so this is an announcement that they announced.
Right. So when you look at, you know, a lot of people have come to me and they're like, you know, Patrick, you're full of shit because...
Who?
There's a lot of people. There are two types of people in Hollywood right now. People
with cognitive dissonance.
The denial that what is happening is happening. You know, it's all going to be better. It's all going to be... Because there's that hopeful optimism that runs through our industry that keeps everybody towing for decades. And then there's people who are like, holy shit, we are in a fundamental transition. I kind of lost my train of thought.
More than ever.
This is
radio to talkies.
This is radio to television.
But even more.
Because we now no longer do you have an audience that tunes into one place. You have an audience. The audience is now being completely diluted. Television, nobody channel surfs anymore. If you're going to, people turn on their TV because for appointment viewing, I want to watch this show that came out on this day. I'm watching my show. I turn my TV off. I go back to scrolling. Scrolling is the channel surfing.
So so CBS or Radford said they were going to make a $2 billion expansion.
Right. So
how is that going to happen?
Well, it's happening because, and again, you just kind of have to back up and do a little critical thinking, you know. So everybody's saying they're going to build these studios. These studios are being built right now. Yes, but a studio doesn't just get built overnight.
No.
You have to get an architect. You have to get the EPA regulations. You have to do the surveys. All that takes years and years. So the announcement, let's use the Warner Brother Ranch, for example, that they're building. You know, they tore it down,
in Burbank.
Yeah, the one off.
So they're redoing it.
They flatlined it and they're building sound stages.
Which Universal did, which I assume is going to be all Peacock.
Right. No, so Warner Brothers sold the land to a real estate firm. And the real estate firm is going to own the sound stages and they're going to lease it back to Warner Brothers.
But if nothing's being shot in California, what are they shooting there?
Well, the point is when these studios got greenlit, was back when content was having that bonanza period back in 2020, 2021, when there was just like, oh my gosh, we need all these sound stages because Netflix is just pumping out. It was when like steroids was injected into the film and TV industry. And so of course, and the money was flowing from Wall Street. So of course the idea of building more studios was a great idea. Nobody saw the crash coming in spring of 2022. Nobody saw it.
What was the crash?
The crash was really when Netflix first announced that they can't get any more subscribers and their stock sank 35%.
Really?
That was when the alarm bells went off. It went completely under the radar. No, everybody kind of missed it. They're like, oh, Netflix is kind of running out of subscribers. But the fact is that was a telltale sign to the other that the streaming model was not working.
Wait, but how many subscribers do they have?
Oh, I don't have their numbers. Netflix doesn't release their numbers.
No, they have like 100.
I don't have those numbers on me. So,
saying they declined?
They didn't decline. But there's one point
they hit their peak.
You plateau.
Okay, they plateaued.
They plateaued, okay. And all of a sudden it's like this is as much money as we're gonna get. Like make any more money on this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh shit. You know, we're in production. Is this sustainable? And then all of a sudden about the same time you just saw your Netflix rates just skyrocket. What they remember Netflix was like $6.99 a month.
Yeah.
And now it's like what some people I think are paying like $22.99 a month or something.
And they
like
have a commercial.
Right. Okay. So that was when they kind of realized streaming shitting the bed. We blew up a model that worked perfectly for 70 years, an advertising revenue model. And in chasing, and what happened was during the pandemic, these other companies, you know, Disney and Peacock and Paramount, they saw what Netflix was doing, and everybody is now sitting at home watching television. So they're like, they're just like break glass, smash things. Don't look at, you know, what is the Jurassic Park line that Malcolm says? You know, they never stopped to ask themselves why. And
right.
They just did it. And they like, we have to mimic Netflix's model. And they did it. And they broke everything in its wake.
So, I mean, you could look on your phone, but I want to stop the momentum. It's probably like 150 million subscribers.
Something like that.
But you're saying but aren't they gaining in the world?
They are.
I mean, they
are.
They Netflix, have look, this whole neighborhood where you're at right now, yeah. Patrick, it's five huge Netflix buildings.
Oh, yeah. Netflix is not going away. No. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying actually Netflix, out of all of the media conglomerates, is the only one that's actually doing better than the rest because they don't have cable channels tied to them.
I'll tell you two things. So I had that meeting at Warner Brothers for a known property.
Yeah.
And they said, this is Warner Brothers. Now, I'm saying it, I don't care. They don't pitch Netflix until they send them a pitch packet.
Really? Interesting.
Warner Brothers!
Right. So they're
Warner Brothers!
They're at the heel. They're at the mercy of Netflix.
Which is insane.
Right.
Okay, that's one of six legacy companies.
Yes.
Number two is, I have also heard, you've been probably hearing, they're good for 2 years in terms of their content. Netflix.
Okay.
And number three, the only people I know that are working steadily, but there's still constriction, is reality. So I know a woman inside of Netflix who's a Patrick type.
Right.
And she goes from show to show. It's what we call filler shows. These are great shows, but they just fill. But she's like, there's people being cut down all over.
Yeah.
So there is completely...
It really is kind of, and I think the feeling, and I have a few friends that work in as executives at networks, and there's kind of like this feeling of like, when am I going to be taken to pasture? It's really kind of like a lot of people are like, it's a waiting game, and maybe I'm just going to wait it out. Like, crazy shit's been happening. 2 weeks ago, the reason I was on Rafford was I was doing an interview with KCAL.
Okay.
And the reporter that
you're becoming the face of this.
Oh, thank you. Tell me more, Jamie.
No, but I'm a little annoyed that you didn't have the Netflix numbers right off the top of your head.
Sorry, dude. I'm not Rain Man, dude. I'm like,
so you sit with KCAL.
So I'm with KCAL, and then, you know, the reporter, we do this interview, it's great. And then she calls me literally 2 days later and she's like, so I was actually one of the layoffs from the Paramount layoffs.
No. So,
yeah.
After the interview?
2 days after the interview. 48 hours after the interview. She's like, I was laid off. And I also had another buddy who was an executive at Fox. And he was just like, I like what you're doing. And then the next day, it's like, I just got laid off. Keep going, Patrick.
Wow. Okay. Out of 100 friends or associates or people in your circle, how many are out of work?
I would say out of 100 friends... Working in the industry, I would say 11 maybe.
11 are working or 11 are?
11 are working.
So 89% are out of work.
I would say in my field, yeah, that seems like an accurate number. And I'm having still conversations with former colleagues that I worked with years ago, and again, these are like people that brought me into the industry. These are like legends, and they're saying, I'm out. I can't get anything. I'm trying to figure out how to pivot. The person that I know is the greatest reality editor of all time. He's like the Michelangelo of editors.
Mm-hmm.
Had to rent out his house and move back to Chicago because he can't afford it.
Wow.
This guy is like, this is the guy that, you know, I said, I'm not working 2 months. He didn't work He was never out of work. Wow. He was just rolling on and on. And he is also one of the most brilliant, avid editors that I've ever seen. He could tell a story. Like, he's the person that every reality producer is like, I want Will on my team.
Is it because less opportunity or AI or what?
It's not.
Is it innovation?
I think it's a multitude of factors, and it's kind of a perfect storm of many things. One, reality TV is 20 years old. It's a worn genre. It's not exciting. It's not new. The new generations are not watching it.
But it's TikTok is reality TV to me.
If you can, but I consider TikTok social media.
It is, but it is
in the same
thing.
But
when you give the reality TV people, put it this way, there's so many annoying people on TikTok that I yearn for Bravo. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. But there's also, here, I'll throw a statistic because you love it when I throw
it. I do. I love it.
So 170 million Americans are on TikTok.
Okay. So more than, you know, about 50%.
Wait, yeah, about half the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more than that are watching TV right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me.
But, you know, TikTok is self-produced content, meaning I am doing my TikTok. You know, a reality show has 30 to 50 staff members. So that's where I see the difference.
89% of your friends are out of work.
I would say that, yes.
How many of them left the city?
Well, I can't, you know, I don't keep running tabs on everybody, but, you know, a lot of people are
maybe 30%.
I would say, I mean, there was an exodus already. I know a few people that have moved back to their hometowns.
Wow.
There's just like...
But this isn't their home. They haven't made roots here forever.
I think a lot of people are kind of like, what's the point of LA if there's no business here?
No, there has been a ton. I know actors that have gone to different hubs.
Yeah.
You know, big stars. I'm pretty sure Stallone went to Florida. Mark went to Vegas. There's people leaving all over.
And I think most people that I know, if they left, they went to Georgia to try to maybe salvage a bit more, believing that, you know, the grass is greener in Georgia. But if you speak to anybody in Georgia production, they're in the same boat. Anybody in New York production, we're in the same boat.
What's being produced in LA?
Well, in terms of reality, unscripted shows, it's only the flagship shows. I heard...
Masked Singer.
I don't even think that anymore. I think it's like the Big Brother, Survivor. Somebody told me 9 of the 10 shows that are on air or being shot have been on the air for over a decade. So it's the flagship legacy shows that have the audiences. What they're not producing or what they're not building, they're not greenlighting any new programming. And I had a show with a network that I was pitching last summer. And it sat at the network for 2 months. And this was like the best news I ever got with the show. And I'm kind of greasing my palms. I'm like, you know, and the network is like, we love it. It's so great. It's such a unique format. We haven't seen anything like this. And I've been working on this project for 7 years. So I'm like finally foaming at the mouth. Like, this is it. And they finally came back at the end of the 2 months. And they're like, we love this. We hate to say this. This is not us. Our mandate coming from above is the only shows we can greenlight are shows that have a celebrity, like a major celebrity attached, or are intellectual property. We can't accept your format.
Yes, this I feel like everyone's going to be Disney-fied, meaning Disney will never make anything outside of their IP.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone wants their own IP, and that's why Netflix beat everybody first, because they did a new thing with people's IP that they didn't know existed, and that's why Netflix has to make their own IP, mm-hmm. because everyone can make their own streaming.
Right.
So that seems like a thing. Like,
it is a thing.
IP or
bust. Brand recognition.
Yes.
And that is because, again, you have these networks that are risk averse. They are trying to make sure, and the people running it are terrified, because you will never lose your job for saying no, but you will lose your job for saying yes.
100%. I had people telling me why when I would sell stuff, and then when it got less and less, and why I couldn't sell stuff, and it's like, you're not fireproof. Like, there were times where you did something with me, if it didn't work, okay, well, it was Jamie Kennedy. But then you have to be, but I didn't even know those jobs exist anymore, because so many of these people are out of the business.
Yeah.
And the constriction or contraction or whatever the word is happening so much. So Paramount laid off recently, 15% of the whole company.
Whole company. I think it was like 5,000 workers, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. 15%.
15%.
Where do you see them going?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. I don't think here's the problem. It's like we first got to look at the problem before you could, like, you have to diagnose the problem before you could come
what
up
is
with
the problem?
Problem is these legacy companies. They just got too big and fat. They consumed. They consumed all these minor companies. And then finally, they got to a point where the companies that, you know, were part of their franchise, that the mediums themselves were becoming outdated. Like, cable channel is a tax write-off now. But for Paramount, it's $6 billion. You know, Warner Brothers is $50 billion in debt.
In debt?
In debt.
$50 billion
in debt. Warner Brothers Discovery.
How?
Cable.
Wait, how? What's the company worth?
Oh man, now you're throwing
$150 billion?
Probably. I mean more than that. Maybe. No, $150 billion, that's the entire industry.
No. Disney was worth
TV is $150 billion.
No, more than that.
No, that was investor at a conference just said TV in general, television as it stands now, is a $150 billion industry. And I think the stats also for social media, for content creator industry, is right now $250 billion.
Makes sense.
So
you're saying, so...
And I'm not saying film, I'm just saying television.
But so David Zaslav comes in.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Discovery guy.
Yeah.
He, to me, I always use the term property brothers.
Yeah.
Like, that's a show that seemed very economical, made us a mark on pop culture, seems like it was easy to produce and made a noise.
Right.
So I feel like that dude wants to take that company and he doesn't care about anything legacy. He just wants to bottom line it. Is that correct?
I don't know. I don't know what David Zaslav is. Like, well, I don't know what his motivations are.
He
but
had a huge...
He seems to be doing fine financially.
Yeah,
I know that. Like,
so I feel like if
he's the only person who's making money in this town, I feel like, anymore.
Well, there's a few CEOs.
Yes.
So, like, but what... Warner Brothers just announced all these shows at some thing, but I'm like, what shows are these? So, my question is, was there even a pilot season this year?
You know what? It seems like it was less. Because it didn't make a lot of noise if there was.
No, so where you said something yesterday in your talk that I saw about how it's a creator community, creator economy.
Yeah.
So NVIDIA yesterday hit their all-time high, $3.1 trillion.
Yeah.
And you said the creator economy is going to hit $1 trillion in 2 years.
$750 billion, $750 billion. So it's going to go up $500 billion by 2027.
And that means that someone, i.e. Alex Earle, you know who that is?
Yes.
So she's on TikTok, grew up an audience, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't really have a TV show, but her life, they follow her. She's got 5 million followers. She has brand deals. That's what, when you say that's part, that creative economy.
Yes.
But in all different ways.
Anyway, what we're doing right now
podcasts, exactly.
Anything that is self-made is the creator economy.
Mm-hmm.
And what you also have to look at is the tsunami that's coming, the generation after mine. I'm a geriatric millennial, okay? That's the term for...
What am I? Jeez, I'm a Gen Xer.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man. Where's your get your flannel out and let's start playing Nirvana. Right?
My Doc Martens are in the closet.
So, they're back now.
I know. Back, right? Some girl stepped on my toe the other day at a show and hurt me in my comedy show. I was like, ow! So, fuck, she was... Okay, go ahead.
They were big boots.
She was thick. So I know the new Zoomers.
So let's say Gen Z and Gen Alpha.
Oh, that's a new one.
Gen Alpha are my kids. I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Oh God,
they are Gen Alpha.
They're already running things.
They're. Oh my gosh, my son can actually probably take over for David Zaslav right now.
Yeah,
he already knows like physics, and it's like it's weird how. You know, at 7, I was just like poking dead things in the woods with a stick.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how. He's super advanced. Like, there.
Well, he has access to a lot of information.
Lots of information. But the statistic that just came out is that 17% of Gen Z watches TV. Now, millennials starting at age 35, 43% watch TV. So that is a 26% loss in generation.
So we're getting to the numbers. That's what I like. Yeah. So what was my generation then?
Oh, you guys are probably, I mean, you know.
I'm going to think like boomers.
But the, I know the percentage increases with age. So if 35-year-olds are 43%, you know, you add your age, and I'm pretty sure that number will be over 50%.
So, yeah, because, like, I kind of watched TV with my mom, and, well, not my dad as much. We sometimes did, but, like, you know, watching Dallas on a Friday night while my mom ironed and my dad smoked a cigarette was a common occurrence in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So that went away.
Right.
And then my generation, when I got into it and what they consumed was, it was like, to break in was like, how do you get on MTV?
Yeah.
And that was foreign to my parents of like, what's this? Not only cable, but they were doing original programming. And then from there, you know, the internet was born and social media, and then there's networks within social media. So it's what I say, verticals on top of verticals on top of verticals. So you're saying 17% of the newest generation watch TV.
Watches TV.
And probably 83%. So I'm already way, I'm an EA, I'm an early adapter, meaning I know everybody in the different realms of this. Right. So I was on MySpace early. I didn't understand what it was going to do, but I knew you had to be there.
And you had your eight friends.
Yeah, exactly. My top eight, YouTube. So, because I knew, there was a very amazing woman at Warner Brothers Records, and she was into technology, and she said, this is what's going to keep the business alive, not the actual physical record sale. So it was all the online stuff. So now I watch tons of TikTok. I think they want to ban it because we're sharing information.
Right.
I mean, there's definitely some things that are annoying about it.
Right.
But in general, like, I wouldn't have discovered you. You wouldn't have had a voice, and it's informative. I see all types of things that I like. Mm-hmm. I also see things I don't like.
Yeah.
But it's short form. I don't have time to sit there and invest in a Netflix that's not going to do anything for me. I want information.
No. But, you know, at the same time, on that point, also, the content that's coming out, television shows, and films, like the actual talent, the best writers, the best directors are chained to this kind of IP. You know, they're only being allowed to make what the people above them tell them they can make.
You know.
And that is ruining, I believe, you know, and I think a lot of creators and creatives, I should say creatives, meaning when I say creatives, I mean us in Hollywood, believe that we are moving towards an indie scene, a new indie movement. If it's like, okay, if these gatekeepers keep saying, you know, trying to say, okay, we have to make another Marvel movie, or we have to make another, you know, Star Wars television show. We're like, and I can't tell you, Jamie, how many scripts I've read that I'm like, this is one of the best movies I've ever read. And they're like, I can't get this anywhere made, you know, unless I go indie. So I think we're on the verge of creatives just finally saying, you know what, if we're going to be in this creator generation, we're going to put the best of the best out there, and we're going to start making our own stuff, and we'll see what cream rises to the top.
So I'm all about that. Yeah. I so agree. I didn't know we still had money for these useless executives. These literally,
I don't think there's much money left.
These carbon-based life forms that just block. That's all they do.
Yeah, you know what? But they're not doing it because they're ruthless. It's because they're trying to save their own jobs.
I know, but that's the problem.
Yes.
And we are in a town of, you know, Michael Bay said this, imitators, not innovators.
Yes.
And it's all these people that are executives that want to make sure their kid can go to private school, but they're ruining. That's not what this is. This is right. An art place. It became two commerce, and there's a ton of fat.
Yeah.
So they're trimming the fat. The issue is, I agree with you, you can make this great movie. How do you get it out there?
Right.
I did a movie. It came out in 10 theaters. It went on Prime. Now it has a new life on Tubi.
Right.
You know what I mean? So Exactly. I'm fine with it. I mean, would I have liked it to make $10 million at the theater? Sure. But if you discover it, maybe, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And who knows what the medium is going to be 5-10 years from now?
Yeah.
Who knows if it's going to be YouTube or it's going to be something else that we all kind of like, oh, thank God. What would life would have been like without the so-and-so that just got invented that we didn't have in our life?
What you're first to market to talk about, I want you to tell people, but I've been hearing about it, is that YouTube's new...
Yeah.
Agenda. Please tell people what that is.
So
this is amazing.
So YouTube came out, and I think just a couple weeks ago, and they said that they're now creating their television homepage screen to mimic that of what you see on Netflix or Hulu, meaning that creators can put their own episodes up and they could get trailers, and it will look kind of like how you would view a show that would be premiering on Netflix. Oh, I could watch the trailer and I could see all the episodes, and it's being almost carbon copied. But the only difference is anybody can put their own material up.
So YouTube is basically tailoring it so that it's their own streaming service. So Paul, the producer, can have his own.
He could have his own channel, his own movie base. And you know what? I've heard a few people say the phrase like YouTube won the war before it even started. Because YouTube right now.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Has 10%, over 10% of the entire streaming market in the world.
That's it? I'm surprised it's not more.
10%, nothing, no company has ever had 10% of the entire communications market, or entire market.
You mean you said streaming? Or
streaming.
Like Netflix streaming?
Like Netflix, out of all streaming globally, 10% is YouTube, which is huge.
Yeah, I would think,
think it would be
YouTube is like the third biggest search engine.
Right.
In the world. So I watch tons of YouTube.
Yeah.
It's YouTube. They're a little draconian.
Yeah.
But I watch tons of that. I watch TikTok. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, basically they're getting everyone's hard work for free, mm-hmm. and hopefully they're going to give us a good cut.
Right. But that's where it gets kind of scary because again, you know, whoever has the golden rule, whoever has the gold makes the rules, right? Well, so
yeah. That's a great term. Right. Well, they made the pipes first.
Right.
They made the most efficient pipes.
Yes.
And so I agree. It's like, do you know enough about the film business or no?
I mean, I know enough of it, but it wasn't my primary, you know, expertise.
Oh, look, and this is no knock on the movie or the people involved. I think, you know, there are legends, everyone involved. But yeah. Joker took an 86%.
Yeah. I do that. Yeah.
That's just, I don't think that's the movie. I think that's just the atmosphere we're in, correct?
I think so. And you know what? It's so funny you say that because.
Which is just wild.
Because it's like you have these executives that are like, again, like we're looking at all the data and the algorithms and stuff. It's like you guys can still not predict the flop. You guys can't predict what the audience wants with all the AI technology in the world. And that's the difference between creatives and algorithms is art is appreciated. And you know what? I even look at my own industry, right? I look at unscripted TV. And if you were to lay out the thousands of shows that came out between, say, 2003 and 2017, and you were to lay them all out and you were to go through their log lines, right? The one line description of every show. Would you say the shows that would be most popular is old guys in Louisiana making duck calls? Okay. Oh, Guido's on the Jersey Shore. You cannot predict what an audience is going to crave and consume.
I know.
It is so fickle.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot, no matter what numbers or algorithms or systems you have,
mm-hmm.
you can't, that's the that is a talent that lies solely in the artist mm-hmm. and the artistry.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, but you are correct. Like the situation was a unique character.
Right.
The guys from Duck Dynasty are a unique character and an underserved audience.
Right.
So people identified with them.
Exactly.
And they weren't crafted in a back room.
Right.
Of, you know.
And they were real.
Yeah, 100%.
And that was the other thing that kind of happened to our industry is we went from real reality where some of the craziest shit that I've ever seen in my life really happened. People are like, oh, that was scripted in that show. It's like, no, that really, I was there. That happened, you know. And then all of a sudden, now again, with this need to be risk averse, television shows, especially reality shows that were documentary style, well, we had to tell the network what we were making. Well, we need to know what you're making. Well, we don't know because we haven't shot it yet. Well, we need to know what we're making. Otherwise, we're investing money and we'll lose. What's episode one going to be? And then it became this like soft, like, okay, well, and sometimes I would actually have to write up decks projecting what might happen, but I had no idea. And then they would say, you know, like you had in your deck that they killed a wild boar. Where's the wild boar? And I'm like, because there was no wild boar, you know, like, but they expected that. And it was not, and that's where it's like, even as an unscripted producer, we started getting tired of it.
Dude, do you remember a movie called Cujo?
Yes. Yeah. Not, I maybe saw it once a long time ago.
It's about a killer dog.
Yes.
And
that neuron's way back, man.
The deep cut.
Yeah.
Well, the guy who produced it, I forget, but he was a guy that got those movies made. And he said, give me the pitch. That's just like kind of where I first heard the term elevator pitch.
Uh-huh.
From 1 to 3, by the time we get to the first floor, I want to know what the f*** this movie's about. And the guy said, it's Jaws on pause. Right?
And sold. Don't sell past sold.
Bam. And
it's like Sharknado.
Yeah, exactly. So when I did my show, Jamie Kane Experiment, I had a guy, Jordan Levin, uh-huh. who's a legend,
yeah.
And Susan, who was married to Suzanne Daniels.
Oh yeah, I know Suzanne Daniels.
Yeah,
who oversaw Kid Nation.
Exactly.
Yeah,
gave me one of my earliest breaks, and Jordan did as well.
Yeah.
But I pitched them literally. I pitched Jordan kind of the show and the commissary, and like wrote ideas on a napkin. And he's like, "Okay, I could probably give you a test demo." Okay, that's how it was. Then my next show I sold to the WB. He's like, "Okay, I like this, but you got to get Fran Drescher."
Uh-huh. Who's
now the president of
Senate.
And I was like, okay, what happens if she doesn't want to do it? And I said, he said, well, do you want your show on? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, you should probably try to convince her. So I, you know, did everything to get Fran, right?
Yeah.
And then the next show, I had this idea, I had another guy help me. It was great. And he's like, you need to be with a huge producer. And that was Mike Fleiss, who's the legend of legends.
Right.
So each thing got a little bit more task oriented mm-hmm. to the point where then it became packets, then it became demos, then it became what's your but I mean
yeah.
So it's just become harder and harder and harder. And I love it when the networks say, well, what celebrities you have attached if you have an idea like that? It's like, no one cares.
And it's also like,
no one cares.
You also work in a studio. Don't you have a phone?
Like, yes.
Can't you call somebody?
Exactly.
I'm sure you know somebody.
No one cares.
They want you to do all the work and for free.
Well, this is what I want to say. So explain how Roku works, because tell me if I'm wrong. So
I don't know how Roku works. I just made a TV show for them.
Well, Roku is basically...
It's like a fast network, right?
It's the device...
Yeah.
Patrick, you have to learn improv. Yes, and... Because you're meaning just lie if you don't know.
Oh.
So Roku is the device that hooks up to your TV a la Apple TV. There's two, like I like to say, it's two things. Mm-hmm. Apple TV is the device which enables you to stream, and it's also this place that makes Apple TV shows.
Okay.
So Roku is the service that goes on your TV.
Yeah.
So you can stream stuff. And then there's the Roku channel.
Yes.
Which just host movies and TV shows. And
right.
Stuff. And so Netflix has gatekeepers, which they didn't have to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Prime has gatekeepers.
Kind of. Prime is also, well, the thing about Prime and
Apple.
Well,
there's two. There's the original productions, and then you can just put up yourself.
Right. But Prime and Apple, I kind of put them like in a weird subcategory because they're not networks first. They're a software company and a retail company first. So
100%.
So, but anyway, go on.
And Apple is so selective now, overpaying everyone. I don't even know the budget of the morning show.
Because they don't worry about it.
No, I know, but what's the point of making the morning show?
To keep Jennifer Aniston with something to do. I don't.
I mean, the budget of that show seems insane.
It is.
It's insane. I don't know who's watching it. No offense, but it's like, I literally feel like Apple made it to get like nominations. I'm sure it's a great show.
Right.
But that's like the last of the fat cats.
Yes. But you know what's funny? It's funny you mentioned that because I've been having a conversation with another producer friend of mine. Because, again, going to the golden rule, whoever has the gold makes the rules. When you follow the money, okay, where does the money go back to? It goes back to the original corporations that did advertising, right? And they're starting their own media. And who's to say? And we started toying with this idea, but it's now that, like, you're seeing Apple do it, to your point, you know, Apple wants to be an Oscar contender. But what if other companies just start getting in on that? What if it's, like, Tide?
Yeah, no.
I like, you know, Coca-Cola. This, you know, this the Oscar contender.
I thought you did something about that.
I did do something about it.
Which company was it? You said it was a company that was going to start.
So Walmart bought Vizio.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to somebody who's working with Walmart, and he said, like, this is kind of like the pitch was they're going to try to create programming where I'm watching the show. I hit pause. And then all of a sudden, the hat you're wearing, I click on that. I could buy that. I could click the lamp on the wall. I could click, and I could buy that all at Walmart. Which is mind blowing when you think of it. It's like that, but I could see it, and I could see that happening. And good God, you know, I would hate the idea of it, and just like what I could just see my own wife, and I'm just like, what the shit is this box? Oh, I was watching my favorite show last night, and I, you know, may have ordered about $600 worth of products.
Yes. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
15% of Paramount went down.
Yes.
Have you have numbers on Warner Brothers?
I don't. I don't have those numbers in front of me. I have numbers from, like, I guess probably because I did the recent TikToks. So that's why I remember the numbers, but I don't have the Warner Brothers numbers. I mean, the thing is, what I can say is all of the streaming networks, all of the conglomerates, no one is adding jobs. They're all losing jobs. They're all slashing. They're all having layoffs. They're all cutting corners.
I mean, look at this right now. Subscribers on Netflix.
Thank you. You're right. I should go back to Groundlings and just be like,
lie, Patrick.
My whole getup is not lying.
How many subscribers? It says Netflix was found. Oh, God. Netflix had fewer than a half. Today it has 260 million paying members.
260 million. And that's globally.
And the market cap is 260 billion.
Okay.
Okay. So now let me just ask you this. Disney market cap. A Disney market cap was at 311 million, a billion?
Uh-huh. Disney has Disney World and theme parks. They got a little bit more.
Now they went back up. They took a hit, but they're at 217.
Disney's got other billion. Assets.
Oh, no. Their market cap is almost off 50%.
Wow.
171 billion.
Oh, man. Iger's going to lose a plane.
So, so it's like, there were rumors. So these studios that are being made in Vegas, Robert De Niro is making a studio.
Yeah.
Radford make a studio. You're saying all of these could potentially halt.
No, I'm not saying that.
What are they going to shoot at Radford?
I don't. What they're going to shoot,
I don't know. Is the sitcom coming back?
I don't know.
Are there going to be 50 cooking shows?
As of now, nothing's going to be shooting there. But
so then why to expand?
Well, the question is, I think they didn't expand knowing that there was going to be a crash.
So you're saying they could expand, but they could stop, take the write off.
Well, what's going to be worth more, a completed studio or a half-built studio?
Okay.
If you look at real estate, I mean, they already invested the money into the project. They invested it back in 2021. They're going to build it. They're going to sell it. But the thing is, it's going to be a lot of empty. It's going to be, you know, public storage units in the future.
So A, do you know where the Tonight Show was?
Yes, the old one on Burbank Studios.
Yeah, that's literally like rented studios, which is crazy.
So also, those studios used to be owned by Burbank. Or not, those studios used to be owned by Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And Warner Brothers sold them.
Wow.
They sold their ranch, and they sold it to the same real estate firm that bought their Burbank studios. So the only studio property Warner Brothers still has is the one with the water tower with the Animaniacs in it. So, and what is that land worth compared to if I was to sell that studio, if I'm David Zasloff, if I was to sell that studio and I could move Warner Brothers to Las Vegas and get in where I have state senators there greasing their palms for my business.
Yeah.
And I am $50 billion in debt. What looks good for me? Who says LA has to be the studio capital anymore?
We're 41 minutes away. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You can still have, they say there's more here in terms of all nature from snow to sun.
Yeah, but you don't need to do that anymore. You just put up an LED wall, you 100%. Know, and you got AI that creates the background for you. You could be anywhere. I mean, I see most, like the Mandalorian, you see the behind the scenes, it looks like it's just one small studio with this like curvature LED wall, and that's how they shoot the whole series.
But what are they going to make, Patrick? So
I don't know.
Like, we used to go out. I would tell people I would go out for Biodome, Meet the Deedles, and Dude Wear My Car all in 2 days.
Yeah.
There was $9 million movies being made all day, and they would get distribution. Now it's a company will make 10 movies a year.
Right.
If
and
that.
Look, and look at Lionsgate. All of them bombed. Every single Lionsgate film of 2024
really
has bombed, and then the next thing that Lionsgate does, hey Runway, would you like to use our? Runway, the AI company? You can have our material, and you can start making AI.
So wait, yes, I saw that with YouTube. What was that? Tell that story.
That was with Lionsgate.
So Runway is what?
Runway is an AI generative platform.
Meaning
they make
with the text prompts. Right,
I want a little white dog, you know, dressed like Pinocchio running down, you know, a glacier, and boom, there it is.
Okay.
So, but the problem that AI has been running into is lawsuits, right? Because they're stealing material. They need material.
They can't use Katniss Everdeen.
Right. Well, that's what Lionsgate is saying now.
Now Lionsgate is saying you have the rights to use Katniss Everdeen.
Yes. They're saying our entire collection is yours, Runway. You can have at it.
And what does Lionsgate get out of it?
They get the opportunity to generate probably more material by AI.
So Runway will make, they'll start in short form, and then they'll make some.
I mean,
they can make a new Hunger.
Yeah. We'll speculate.
They can make a new Hunger Games.
Yes.
With no actors.
Potentially, yes.
But using all the actors.
Again, and that's where I don't know the deal, because then you have like Jennifer Lawrence, who has a likeness, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's Jennifer Lawrence, who is Katniss Evergreen, or Everdeen, sorry. So where's the red line? You know, where's the line where you say, well, but that's Jennifer Lawrence's face.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's right. So you know, it's all like these unprecedented questions are now coming up. But I think, like, if you're from a studio mindset, yeah, cheaper productions. But at the same time, you're seeing from the creative community us saying, like, give us a shot, man. And I think what I'm actually starting to do is I'm talking to representatives in Sacramento right now, and they asked me earlier this week, they said, if you could ask the state anything right now, what would the ask be? And they actually came back and they said something pretty smart too. They were like, you know, I know a lot of people are hounding at the doors of the Capitol saying, you know, come save our industry. But from a government perspective, why would we be rewarding these mega corporations that are just going to be planning on leaving the state anyway? Like, we'd put a Band-Aid on the problem, but they're still going to globalize and go out. Which I thought was an excellent point. And so she asked me, she said, and I kind of posed this to my own community, what if the state was to start incentivizing those $2 to $5 million films, the ones that we can make, the ones that, like you said, comedies. We don't see them in the movie theater anymore. They were the cheapest forms of films you can make with, like, you know, quadruple 10 times the profit. You know, mm-hmm. you can make a $10 million comedy that pulls in $200 million at the box office.
Malibu's Most Wanted cost $12 million. It made $82 million all in, and they still say they're in the red.
See?
It's because that's scummy.
Wow.
They're scum. They lie. And I can tell you why. It's because the marketing budget is X amount of dollars, yeah. and that year a Harry Potter came out.
Right.
So they equate the same amount of money to each movie, even though the Harry Potter's getting $50 million and Malibu's getting $5 in P&A.
Yeah.
But they just put it over there.
I
you understand? So that's
yeah.
it's all this studio accounting
right.
bullshit.
Right.
But you're right. It but should be still, dollar one.
But still, like, you think of, like, Pulp Fiction, and how much did that make?
$8 million, and it right. made $300 million, and it's forever
and
a legacy.
And again, you have these brilliant filmmakers that mm-hmm. are coming on the scene that are just, like, foaming at the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what would be better for this town right now than to say, let's make 100 $2 million movies instead of one $200 million movie?
Exactly your point. The town would be thriving. Coffee mm-hmm. shops would be booming. Late night places eating. You know, you'd be riding at diners.
Yeah.
The hall, Ubers would be Ubering. Like, like all of it.
Yeah.
Like thrift stores would be thrifting because people right. are like, I got to work. Like, well, Justine Bateman, who is brilliant,
uh-huh.
talks about this and she knows a ton of AI. And she said, literally, you're going to say, this is 100% organic human-made content.
Yes.
And I think if we want to survive, we're all going to consume AI. We're doing it now.
Right.
We're going to go, my buddy made this. It's like seeing your friends play.
And but still, you know what's so interesting, and I think this is also kind of like why reality TV is hurting, the new generations, they want real. That's why they go to social media.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and what we're starting to see now, especially with sort of the unveiling of celebrity that has been brought on by social media and more people being able, like
Done.
P. Diddy, right?
Yeah.
You know, like who was in the 90s in the
yeah.
prime era,
yeah.
you know, he was godlike. Now mm-hmm. you're just like, what a, you know.
Well, I think that's going to unravel a lot.
Right. And
of
I think
things.
We're going to see a lot more of that, too.
Yeah.
And so this idea of I like real people who are honest and earnest, you know, and to that extent, I think if filmmakers or even producers, I think you can even make small, you know, microscopic episodes or even produce television in that budget range as well. And I think if you have the creatives who are actually doing the greatest storytelling,
mm-hmm.
There's going to be, I think, an attraction back to cinema again. There's a magic there that we grew up with it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think like there's I want to say it's Vidiots.
Idiots.
In
yeah.
In Silver Lake or Echo Park, Duplass Brothers, I think, have a, like their own little VHS spot, little cinema. I know Quentin, he redid the Vista.
Yeah.
I believe he has the New Beverly. I think he has like four movie theaters. I think he'll probably take over the Dome.
Right.
So, I mean, it will be a cool thing.
Right.
Will it be as mainstream? I don't know.
Will it be in theaters? I don't think so.
No, there yeah. will be theaters that you go out on a Saturday night, and
yeah.
you can watch any movie. You
right.
can watch Taxi Driver, or you can watch the newest Star Wars.
Right.
But will, and there's also that 4X where you're watching a movie and seats
oh, yeah.
are rumbling.
And then there's now the goggles that you could be in a film. Have you seen that?
No.
Where you know how they have, you know how they have the VR goggles, the Meta goggles?
Yes.
So I just saw this last week where you could put on the goggle and you were in the movie. You were in the scene.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. With the help of AI, I could just all of a sudden, you know, if this is The Godfather and, you know, you're Marlon Brando and I'm Al Pacino, you're sitting right there watching everything and you could look around you.
But not a new release. Can you be in like a new release when The Rock does a movie and in the movie?
I don't think I think they have to be specifically built
wow.
for that type of show or that type of movie. Like they have to, like, you can't just be like, I'm going to do this to any movie. I was using The Godfather as an example.
Yeah.
But putting you in the scenes in the movie where you can look around and do a 360 and be there in the scene.
Wow.
Right? Mind blowing, huh?
So where, okay, so here, let me ask you these rumors and you tell me if they're true.
Okay.
Apple buys Sony.
I've heard rumblings of that, but I don't know if any truth to that.
Warner Brothers and Paramount get packaged together and Bezos buys them.
there is packaging happening, I know, with Max and Disney. And I think that's a survival method that, again, we're just going back to cable. You know, oh, it's because, again, the rule right now is the American audience doesn't want to pay more for five subscribers. They max out at five. And that's the most.
Five different platforms
like Max, Amazon, you know, Max, Disney, Netflix. You know, I'm not going to pay for any more than five. And that's the people that want to pay the most. Most people want like just will pay for one or two. So if you look at that game, who's already won the game? Netflix, Max, Disney Plus, and Amazon. And then there's sort of this fight for the fifth spot right now between Peacock and Paramount Plus and the rest. So you have all these. So there's this fight going on right now for those spots.
So would you say the most thriving companies, even though they're taking hits, is Disney?
No, I would say Netflix is the most thriving company.
Wow.
Because Netflix doesn't have any baggage. They don't have cable channels. They don't have anything. They're a streaming service. They don't have any asset. They barely have assets in terms of studios.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I almost think...
You know, they're like an Uber. You know, Uber doesn't own any of the cars.
It's brilliant.
Right?
I also think the buildings that are all around this, that are revitalizing this town.
Yeah.
I feel like half of them are going to be filled with servers and not people.
Probably, but I mean, that's if... You know, that's if Netflix goes its way. I really think that we are kind of on the brink of a new era
of
creatives taking back their power.
Not even going to Netflix?
No.
Just
no.
using the YouTube?
I think here if you want to beat Netflix at their own game, mm-hmm. here's what you do. You start creating content that is so valuable that Netflix goes, hey, we'd like that on our platform.
How do you get people to see it? You have to use... The YouTubes and the Rokus, correct?
I mean, this is where the talents of the entertainment industry would come into play. You know, if we have marketers that are out of work, if we have producers and directors, big names, you know, and I think I saw something that even like Frank Darabont was producing a YouTube series.
It makes sense.
Right?
It makes
sense. So, you know, if we start going and if we really, truly like banded together as a community, I think there is a way that some cool stuff can happen. And I don't think anybody's inhibited anymore.
No.
Because originally, you know, there was this fear that ran through the industry. You know, you say anything bad, you talk, you stand up, you speak too loud, you get the scarlet letter B for blacklist.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and to be banished from Hollywood was the greatest sin.
I know.
And, you know, and I bit into that system. Since I was a PA, when I was early on, you know, I keep my head down, don't look the EPs in the eye.
You learned.
I learned, and then something happened that changed my entire life.
Which was?
I was working on a show, and I was co-EP, so I had my nose to the grindstone, you know.
Very Is this important. The NDAs you were talking about?
No, not an NDA.
Okay.
My mom got cancer, stage 4 lymphoma.
I'm very sorry.
But I had to keep working. I had this show. Mom, I have this, you know, this is the greatest opportunity. Because everything's the greatest opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to squander that opportunity. And my siblings got to have their final talks with my mom. And then I got the call, you have to come home. I got home 3 days before she died. Didn't have a last talk. She was too sick. All of a sudden, my entire world was disrupted. And nothing that was important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, I just lost the most important thing in my life, and I didn't realize it. And within a year, tragically, my dad got in an accident, and I lost my father, too. And this is all at age 35. And it was my epiphany. It was my all of a sudden, I had a different perspective on life. And I said, hey, you know what? I am not my job. I am not... Why am I grateful to be on this show? I'm not grateful. It's a job, and I'm good at my job. You should be grateful for having me. You know, all of a sudden, I started getting my power back, and the fear that really kind of gripped me started to dissipate. I wasn't scared of anything anymore because the worst thing had already happened to me. So I had nothing to be scared of anymore, and I started using my voice. I realized I had a voice, and it was just as powerful. And then that's when everything kind of came to a head earlier this year. You know, I always think of the way I've always run a crew, I've always been empathetic. I always love my crew. You know, my motto is always, if I take care of my crew will take care of me. And then all of a sudden I'm hearing stories of my crew's hurting and family suffering. And I'm afraid that I'm going to lose my house and I can't put food on my, for, you know, I can't put food on the table for my kids. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I have to say something. Mm-hmm. And I raise my voice, and then, you know, and I had an agent who called me last week, a big agent in Unscripted. I don't know. Do you know Hayden Meyer?
Huge.
Okay.
UTA?
He's a former AP, whatever APA is.
Yeah.
IPA.
Mm-hmm. IGA. Yeah, I know.
So he called me and he goes, Patrick, I'll be honest with you. When I first heard you say that, I go, this guy's committing career suicide. But then all of a sudden, but something different happened. All of a sudden people started saying, you know what? Me too. I'm out of work. Something's f***ed up. I've lost. I can't find a job either. I'm not working. We're not hearing anything. This is one of the major crashes of one of America's biggest economies. Like, entertainment is one of the biggest U.S. exports in the world. And when the cars crashed, we heard all about it. When the banks crashed, we heard all about it. When the entertainment industry crashed, crickets. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing I think I left out is when I first started my job, I started my career in New York in journalism. Mm-hmm. And I started working as in newsrooms, and that's how I spent the first 2 years of my career. When when TV crashed or reality crashed, I actually started going back to work at a local news station as a writer.
Here?
In San Francisco. At KGO.
Okay.
And for about a year, that's what I was doing, just to, you know, supplement income. And because, and fortunately I was like, look at the bottom of my resume. See right there. I was in a newsroom once. But through that of just like, you know, and it was mundane and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I used to be on beaches in Fiji, you know, doing survival shows. And now I'm like at this desk being like, is your cat caught in a tree tonight at 11? You know, it's like, but all of a sudden I was honing a new type of skill of reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I didn't realize it, but I was gearing myself up for what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And I was practicing. And now for me, the truth will set you free, and it's setting this industry free. And the most tragic thing happened in August, where a very dear cinematographer friend of mine took his life.
No.
Committed suicide. And what eats me is 2 months before that, he emailed me begging for work. And he was later in life, so I'm sure he was looking at it, as we say, we look at our own identities, tied to television and film. And I know so many, I used to do that until I had to go through something to teach me that I was not my job. And that just only empowers me, because I know there are people out there that are wondering, what the fuck is going on? Is it me? And are they going to do something tragic? And I think of that a lot. And I don't want anybody to do that. I'm saying, hey, you know what? This industry is changing. You should know that it's changing, so you can prepare yourself or do what you need to do. But you know, please don't like just hang on to this idea that it's going to come back and everything's going to be fine, because I don't think it is. And we all should be talking about this and discussing what's next. Sorry, that was a lot. Sorry. I didn't mean to. I'm
no, a producer. Dude, that Sorry. Was beautiful. No, you weren't doing a segment. That was... I'm very sorry for your loss.
No, thank you. But it was, you know what? I look at it now and I go, that was the most important lesson my parents ever taught me. And, you know, and that also, like, again, like through that, had I not gone through that, I wouldn't probably have the strength that I have today.
No, you're right, dude.
Yeah.
You know, if it makes you feel any better, I don't have any parents either.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, well, they lived a long time. God rest their soul. I was the youngest of six. My mother had me when she was 45.
My mom had me at 43.
Yeah, which might...
I'm the youngest of 10.
Jesus.
Not for the same. So I come from yours, mine.
There's something called a condom.
Well, you know, Catholic Italians, Catholic Irish.
There
we
go. Yeah, same thing.
You know, you also have to give a couple to the church.
Yeah. Oh, shots fired. Wow, good for you. Dude, this is incredible.
Yeah, man.
I really appreciate your time. You're full of knowledge. Where do you think, just the last question.
Yeah.
Disney's doing okay.
Yeah.
No, Netflix is doing the best. What's the next? Amazon? But there's so much more than.
But again, Amazon's a retail company. This is just kind of a.
What company do you think? Well, like, I just have to ask you because that was such a beautiful thing, and I hate that we should have ended it there. But do you think what's going to happen to Comedy Central? What's going to happen?
There is no Comedy Central. That's done. That's toast. That's already gone.
Where's MTV?
Gone.
What does it mean? What is actually happening with the assets?
They're going to, you know, it's dying out.
No one's helming them. There's no.
They're kind of on a skeleton crew. You know, it's basically.
They don't buy anything.
You know, it's like you're on a, like imagine, it's like hospice. It really is. It's like, who's running the hospice care for, you know. MTV Network or Nickelodeon or
they're on hospice.
Yeah, they're all on hospice.
Wow.
Yeah. It's and the demographic, like, you know, again, like if you think about it, Jamie, you know, some, you know, woman in Iowa who's 23 gets more ratings doing her makeup tutorial than some of the best shows on Discovery.
You have 238,000 subscribers. You've gone up. They say Anderson Cooper only has 244 viewers. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So I just had a question with you. It was MTV. It was. Fuck.
We all have ADD in this industry, unfortunately. No, sorry.
They're gone.
They're basically. Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount both said last month, they announced that they have to write off. Their cable channels.
So nothing's happening with them. Okay, so I don't know if I'm going to keep this in, but I want to ask you, and you,
yeah.
I can bleep it. I love them, but one of the independent people I worked for a lot was Byron Allen.
Was who?
Byron Allen. Do you know Entertainment Studios? I want to know if you know what's happening there.
I wish I did.
Well, Byron had a show.
Sorry, so they said yes and.
Yes, just go with it.
Byron's, he died.
No, because here's you on TikTok. 83.7% of people at Netflix are gluten-free. Now, those jobs are going, and then I ask you, I don't know.
It's just like it's selective knowledge. You know, I come in, I was like, I got the stats for this, but, you know, Jamie pulled a fast one. He's like, what are Netflix's stats? And I'm like, fuck.
Well, dude, you're doing God's work, man. You're incredible. Again, I'm very sorry for your loss. Thank you for sharing with me. But this is fascinating. Like, this is needs to be said. I'm glad you're out there. I look at your stuff. I subscribe to you. You're a wealth of knowledge.
Thank you.
And if you just drive down, if you drive down Melrose and Sunset, I literally shed a tear. I was down Ventura from Van Nuys all the way to Hollywood Boulevard. And the Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can see Melrose taking a hit. I can see Sunset taking a hit. But Ventura.
Right.
Where it's supposed to be cheaper. It's the valley.
Right.
And the biggest business on that boulevard is for lease. And it bought, dude, so you're not lying. And people don't really, and I know it's happening across America and many things, but this was a thriving industry. A person that you didn't know, that was the seventh doctor on a cable syndicated show that was just filler,
right,
was still making enough to buy a house.
So can I tell you something? I sorry for extending your show.
Go for it, dude.
I have to tell the story because I was speaking. I was speaking to a reporter yesterday, and I brought up the story, and I think it's actually very pertinent to what's going on. So my first job in LA when I was a production assistant was at E! Entertainment on Wilshire. I worked for True Hollywood Story. I was a PA.
Wow, legend.
And I made $400 a week. I was. overworked. I had no medical benefits, but I had the time of my life. Mm-hmm. And at E, there would be a summer party every summer. And they would like, they're like, everybody, you're done at 3 o'clock, go to the courtyard. And it would be open bars, top shelf liquor. There was a private concert. We had Kanye West perform a private concert for all the E staffers.
Wow.
You know, and it's like A-listers are busting out their moves. This was, you know, harder, better, faster, stronger Kanye, not like.
Yeah.
So, and like the interns are making out because they're about to go to college. It was
just normal.
It was just. Fun. It was fun.
Not everything was documented.
Right.
Everything was consensual. Everybody was having a good time. They were letting off steam.
We were just, it was a time to be alive. Nobody had phones, you know, or you had a razor phone.
Seth's over there in the other building where I used to record Cleveland and the Family Guy. He had his Aaron Spelling's over there. I know the building exactly.
Totally. It was a different LA. The most recent program I worked on, I had to fight just to make sure our crew members could get their lunch covered. And then they were like, there's a $20 cap, and whatever they go over, they have to pay back to the company. So if they pay $23, make sure you get $3 back from them. And basically, the DP, he's like, I will cover everybody. But that's where we are. And I think, and I compare these two experiences of when I was a PA to when I was, you know, had reached sort of the pinnacle of my career.
And the PA, you're being treated better.
I had a better time as a PA than I did as a showrunner.
Dude, that's such a good story. And yeah. It so bums me out because the fun bus has left the station.
And you remember, LA used to be a blast. I mean, I was privileged to live in the city in my 20s and 30s. And, you know, some of my best memories are you know, right up there on the Sunset Strip or over in Santa Monica. And it was just a different, like.
Bro, I would take a morning meeting.
Yeah.
At the Standard.
Yeah.
Eat, go to a casting director across the street, eat at Pink Taco, and then meet for drinks at Cabo. All the four of those places are closed.
Dude,
That's fucking crazy.
No, and I woke up on a pool chair on the, in the Standard, because I walked out of Saddle Ranch and I must have stumbled over and fell asleep, and no one bothered you.
Living your life.
Yeah.
What happened, happened.
What happened, happened. It's cool.
It was fun.
It was fun.
Dude, I know, it bums me the f*** out.
Yeah.
But that's an amazing story because, yeah, you were worked your balls off. It's the beginning of your career.
Yeah.
It's a PA. You're not making a ton of money, but you maybe had one roommate. You could survive. And then when you had a blowout, it was a blowout.
Oh, yeah.
They took care of you.
Right.
Now everyone's like.
It was like.
And the shit you made was seen. True, yeah. Hollywood was seen.
Right.
Now people are cutting corners for something you never even heard of.
No, and you were just like, and E was great. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. The joke was you can't spell cheap without E. I mean, so it's like, but they were like, oh, I have another story for you. I have to give you this one because I think it's 20 years now, and I'm pretty sure the NDA has expired.
You're fine.
So like, you know, I was, you know, again, like a baby.
There was probably a couple people doing a little toot at that party.
Oh, I'm sure.
Saying you saw it. Powdered sugar in a pancake.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, go ahead. No judgments.
So I remember like being at E, they would do stuff like, hey, so we don't have a producer to go to Vegas to interview George Maloof. He just opened the Palms. You want to go? You know, and then.
My stomping ground. Go
right.
ahead.
So I'm like 22-year-old me is like, okay, yeah, can I go? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sitting down and it's George Maloof and we're in like the Playboy suite, you know, and it's like, you know, and I'm shaking, rattling with my questions. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Maloof.
So you're the guy off camera. Yeah,
they never show you. No, they never show you, you know, and so, you know.
Huge get for you, by the way.
What's up?
Huge get for you.
Oh, huge get. I'll follow this up. But, you know, the first question I ask is like, so what is the number one thing your customers ask you for? And George Maloof goes, turn off the camera. I'm like, okay, turn off the camera. Okay, we stopped the camera. Prostitutes. Turn the camera back on. And you gotta imagine me just
wow.
like, that was the first interview question I ever asked.
Wow. Wow. So one of the greatest parties I was ever at was at Dap Suite.
Yeah.
George Maloof parties.
Okay.
And Jeremy Shockey.
Yeah.
Terrell Owens, myself, a ton of other people, and Deep Roy, who's my buddy. So yeah, that suite
hooked me up and my buddies up. He was like, after this, he's like, here's my personal number. Call me next time you're in Vegas. And I called him next time, and dude,
he's the mensch.
He is a mensch.
Yeah, the whole family are.
Yeah.
They're the best.
Super cool shit, too. You know, and again, like, I was like, you know, who was I to him?
Well, you get a six-pack of Coors,
yeah,
courtside seats, and a suite. That's what they own, guys. Three things, Coors, the Kings, yeah, and the Palms.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the family is beautiful.
Yeah.
And the stories that you can tell that don't tell.
Yeah, that doesn't leave Vegas.
And it's all above board, but it bums me out. I want to give you this. The first thing to ever film at the Palms,
yeah,
Real World.
Yeah.
Second thing, my show. He gave us the run of it for 2 weeks.
Wow. Good.
And so it's just,
yeah. And he was cool as shit.
I know.
Really cool shit.
And even a young PA who, yeah, goes there, big break for you. You go, you interview, you're on E's dime, you did your thing, you turn it over to the story producer.
Yeah.
They do it. Now you have a whole night in Vegas.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, hey, you know, go check out the, what was it? It was like, one was the Playboy Club, and the other building had another club on top, too. That was pretty fun. It had the roof that opened.
Yeah. And now they're going to say, we need a budget for your tequila.
Oh, they're going to be like, we're not staying at the Palms unless, yeah, they give us the rooms for free.
Otherwise, you're staying at Spiegel, Motel 6. Spiegel Suites. Or Spiegel Suites.
You only have 7 hours.
Yes.
And then you have to leave. We only paid for 7 hours.
Bro, the Hard Rock is gone.
What?
It's gone.
No.
What is it? It's now the Virgin. They're going to redo it, but it's bumming me out. There's so much.
Oh,
trust me.
Oh, man.
I know.
Well, you know what? The good times can't last, right?
No. We're bringing them back.
You only have to. You only know where up is once you hit rock bottom, right?
Yeah.
That's all you can go. So let's go up.
Yeah. Dude, thank you for your time.
You.
I appreciate it, man.
Oh, my gosh. This has been a lot of fun, Jamie.
You're awesome. You want to plug it. It's producer Patrick or Patrick producer.
It's producer Patrick.
Yes.
On your TikTok it's producer Patrick. On Instagram it's producer.patrick.
Yes.
But you could probably find me either way.
And you're going to be watch this stuff. It's incredible if you're in our business or
you want to learn about the business.
Yeah, and how it's changing. And thank you, brother.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. You're the man.
Hey. New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.